opinions expressed on this WebmasterRadio.fm program are those of the host, guests, and callers, and do not reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of WebmasterRadio.fm. Any rebroadcast or retransmission of this program without the express written consent of WebmasterRadio.fm is prohibited.
All rise.
Welcome to the Cyber Law and Business Report. Get the top story on the hot-button internet legal topics of the day. This is your home for the latest on internet law and policy. Hear the latest net trends impacting business and have your questions answered right here. This is the Cyber Law and Business Report. Now, please welcome your host, the founder of the Internet Law Center, Bennett Kelly.
Good morning, and this is Bennett Kelly from our studio in Santa Monica. We got a great show for you today. We're going to start off talking about the FTC's annual report and how you can avoid being part of next year's annual report. And then in the second half hour, we have Dan Tynan back from eSarcasm. And what's that? Hello?
Hi, this is Lindsay Lohan. I am a big fan, by the way, but I must warn you that this is an attempt to collect a debt. But if you don't want to worry about money, just enter this $1 million sweepstakes, or help me get a zillion out of North Congo.
Hello, Lindsay? I don't think we lost her. Guys, we have a policy against taking calls from celebrities in rehab. Remember that. All right, well, that little ditty was not really from Lindsay Lohan, but it illustrates about four or five of the top things on the consumer complaints the FTC received in 2010. For starters, number one was identity theft. Number one may be identity theft. And by the way, you may be seated as we started off with the all rise. Identity theft was number one, by far the number one complaint, with over 250,000 complaints in 2010. Next on the list was debt collection. And that's, you know, she mentioned this was an attempt to collect a debt. And right there, that's 144,000. So almost 500,000 complaints right there on that alone. She mentioned you can join the sweepstakes. That's number four with 64,000 complaints. And then, of course, there's the get money from overseas. And that's number eight. So, the FTC issued its annual report. It talks about what it has been addressing each year and what of its enforcement priorities. And so I thought it'd be a good point to talk about how can you avoid being in next year's annual report. In other words, what are the key things you need to watch out for that so you don't get into the crosshairs of the FTC? Well, identity theft is pretty obvious. You don't want to assume someone else's identity. But there's one area that the FTC has been focusing heavily on lately, and that is negative options. And negative options isn't where you sell negativity. It's an option. It's a plan where a consumer gets charged for something unless they do something affirmative to stop the charge. You know, for example, you know, a lot of us have done record deals with the record companies where, you know, you sign up and you get 13 CDs. And then you keep getting one each month until you cancel. And the internet has found that one of the great ways to make money is through recurring purchases. There's a lot of money in small items because if it's something consumers use frequently, they'll constantly reorder. And so that's why you see a host of websites that sell very good products. You know, for example, ink. And other things that consumers need on a regular basis, and they're often set up on what's called the continuity plan, where the consumer will get so much every so frequently, and unless they ask for more or they cancel. Well, there are a lot of plans like that are very good and very helpful to consumers, but there are also a lot of plans that out there that are trying to more or less take advantage of the fact that the consumer's inertia and failure to act, and buy it and dump a lot of products on them before they cancel. Now, this has also caused the credit card companies to act, since they're tired of all the chargebacks they get, and so they've actually tightened their standards. But, and I want to highlight one thing, is California recently passed a law on negative options, which actually you should be aware of, because if you don't comply, anything sent to the consumer is considered a gift. And so we all can only hope that Alfa Romeo sets up their own negative option program and fails to comply. But let's talk about what it is that they're really focusing on. The key here is that the FTC and other governmental agencies really want informed consent. And that means that you have to disclose the material terms to the consumer in a way that's visible to them before they make the choice. So putting them in, you know, burying them in terms and conditions with an asterisk at the bottom of the page doesn't cut it. And so what is required is that you disclose what it is, the terms such as the frequency, such as how do they cancel, such as what will the monthly charge be. And if you disclose all those, you're good. And but they have to be clear. It has to be visible of a certain size. And the consumer has to be able to take steps to cancel if they want to get out. And so that's a big issue here. You see these a lot, and the FTC has really stepped up enforcement in this area over the years. Now, another way to get into the crosshairs of the FTC or the state regulators is to really be in one of the area, kind of the hot scam areas. It doesn't mean that everyone in these space are scammers, but there are certain areas that have a high level of fraud, and so you should act knowing that the FTC is watching. And some of those areas include, one, what is often called cosmeceuticals, and those are cosmetic products that, they call them cosmeceuticals because they're not just cosmetic products, but they have some medical or physical benefit beyond just the cosmetic aspect. And there you can get in trouble for a couple of reasons. One, they usually involve negative options. And so, you know, that's the first thing that trips a lot of people up on that respect. The second, though, are the claims that are made with respect to what it is this product does. And, I've often joked that I would love to start a website called placebo.com. Because, as you know, in any study, medical study that's performed, you know, they always have a placebo where, you know, certain groups just get, a pill or whatever that does absolutely nothing. And but what is known as the placebo effect is that sometimes it actually works, because some consumer psychologically thinks that in the test that this they're taking something that will benefit them. And so in every case has been looked at, there's always some response level at the placebo. And plus, you also don't know what other factors are going on. Consumer in the health studies, for example, they may have changed their diet or whatever. But so practically every disease has been found to have been at some point to a certain extent treated by placebos with some success, albeit very small. And so I use the example of placebo.com because I could put up a website and say, this cures cancer, erectile dysfunction, blindness, you name it, because there has been some studies to that effect. But that's misleading because it doesn't really tell them that, well, it's only in a few rare cases. And so the other thing is one that's deceptive, but the other thing is a lot of times these sites get in trouble because they overstate the benefit. And granted, saying that a placebo will cure all these different diseases is overstating to an extent, but there are at least some evidence that it has done that. What a lot of sites often you see is that it will do things that will that just frankly there's no scientific basis to claim that. And there's another area where you get into trouble in this respect. Is there's a group called the Ad Council that will review complaints received about your advertisements, and then depending on what their assessment is, they may refer it to the FTC. And one thing that comes up frequently in that area is complaint ads that try to claim that they're better than Botox. And Botox regularly complains about those And what happens is then you have to show that there's some medical basis for that claim. And the other danger in this area isn't that you're overstating the efficacy of a product. The danger is also that you're in an area that is semi-regulated, but if you go too far, you step into a very highly regulated area. And what do I mean by that? Well, the whole reason why these are called cosmeceuticals is because they're basically being marketed as cosmetic products with some pharmaceutical aspect to them. But it's not really a pharmaceutical because it's not regulated or tested by the Food and Drug Administration. But what triggers that is if you make a claim that a certain product alters a physical structure, alters a molecular structure. So, for example, with anti-wrinkle cream, if you claim that it eliminates wrinkles or things of that nature, well, that's actually claiming a physical transformation versus claiming that it makes your skin look younger. You know, appearance, that's just an appearance view. The wrinkles still may be there, but it is masked somewhat, for example. The problem in this case is that once you start claiming that there's some physical transformation, you're actually going into an area where your product now is considered a drug. And so you have to be very careful when making those claims, because once you claim it's a drug, well, drugs can't be released to the market without going through extensive testing and approval by the FTC. And so that's why these areas have been particularly focused on by the FTC for a couple of, one, because they often involve negative options, and two, because the FTC has really been increasingly focusing on medical claims and trying to require some basis for the medical claims. And that's not just a guess that they may do something. You have to be able to show that you have some study that backs it up. And so if you want to get into the FTC's crosshairs, you step into the area of cosmeceuticals and offer a negative option plan. And once you start making some sales, one, it's certain that complaints will arise. And second, if you get enough, then you may get a call from Washington or one of the FTC field offices. Now, there's also state attorney generals. And when we get back from our break, I'm going to talk a little bit about complaints to the state attorney general. Roscoe?
Stay tuned for more of the Cyber Law and Business Report after this brief recess for our sponsors.
Looking for an affiliate network that can package every solution an advertiser or publisher needs in one account? Your one-stop source for full-server solutions is AdMedia.com. AdMedia delivers an incredible lineup of specialized XML feeds for local, social, and search, plus the advertising arsenal of PPC, SEM, contextual, display, and more. AdMedia gives your campaign real visibility, from emailers to domain redirects. AdMedia tailors your all-in-one campaign to give your account a real advantage. AdMedia.com delivers cost-effective ad solutions with real conversions. Learn everything AdMedia can do for you today. Sign up at AdMedia.com. AdMedia, strong ROI made simple.
Oh yeah, my day is done. Time for happy hour.
You're already done for the day?
Yeah, because I use CertifiedKnowledge.org. Their PPC tools literally save me hours every day.
How do you keep on top of all of Google's new features?
Easy. With Certified Knowledge, their interactive learning modules keep me up to date. And if there's something I don't know, I can watch their video lessons without having to hunt around the Google help files.
Great. I'm ready to expand my knowledge.
Hi, I'm Brett Geddes. I'm the only leader officially supported by Google to teach the advanced track of the AdWords Seminars for Success. I personally recommend CertifiedKnowledge.org as your one-stop shop for all your PPC needs.
Learn, optimize, connect. Be smart. Go to CertifiedKnowledge.org now.
Hey, this is Danny Sullivan to talk to you about Bruce Clay Incorporated. They've made Inc. Magazine's list of growing private businesses and have exhibited and sponsored at my conferences since the very beginning. You've seen their search engine relationship chart, or you've read their SEO code of ethics, seen other SEO experts, but did you know they can help you with PPC, web analytics, web design, marketing strategy, promotion, and branding? Yep, get everything you need for success in the online marketplace. You can check it out from the professionals at Bruce Clay Incorporated. For over 10 years with offices worldwide, they've got the answers you need. Check them out today at BruceClay.com.
The best gavel-to-gavel legal news and information on the net is right here. This is the Cyber Law and Business Report, only on WebmasterRadio.fm.
Well, and we're back. You're listening to Cyber Law and Business Report. I'm Bennett Kelly with the Internet Law Center. And before we left, we were talking about complaints from state attorney generals. And let me back up and explain a little bit of how this process works. So if you're in an area that you're selling products, and it could be it's any product really, but we were talking about certain products before, such as cosmeceuticals, that the FTC tends to focus on. But regardless of what product you're selling, consumers complain. Consumers complain to you. Consumers complain on Yelp. Consumers, naturally, those complaints also go to governmental authorities. Now, what happens when a complaint goes to the FTC? When a complaint goes to your state attorney general? Well, each state attorney general has a unit to respond to consumer complaints, and all they do is forward that complaint to you and ask that you respond. Whether or not any further action results depends on what your response may be, but often it's just, consumer has an issue. If you take care of the issue, you're done. And of course, if you get a whole lot of them, then you can start getting noticed by the FTC. By the state attorney general. So when you start getting those letters, one, you want to address them promptly, and you want to try to take care of that consumer. Act very, very pro-consumer from that point of view, because you want that person not to feel that they've been cheated, and you definitely want the state attorney general to believe that you've been fair to that consumer. And you see these things come up often. One would be anyone purchasing online sometimes complains that they try to return something and they didn't get a full refund because they didn't comply with the policies. Well, you want to respond and explain, listen, this is what our policy is, so we paid this. But you also may want to consider just giving them the refund and say, listen, but explain to the attorney general what your policy is, but we were still doing this as a matter of goodwill. And so that's an important thing when you're in an area that's got a lot of focus and it's getting a lot of attention. Now, what are some of the areas the FTC is focusing on? Well, one are the business opportunity deals where you can work from home and make, whatever the number says in the ads, they range, but you make tons of money on Google with Google ads. And they just cracked down on a bunch of them. One, because the plan itself didn't yield anything. But two, also they were being very deceptive with their negative option plan. And one thing that's common in both this and there's also how to get government grants to pay off your debts. Well, one, you can't get a government grant to pay off your debt unless you're GM. But so the FTC cracked down on those people because, one, they're offering a deceptive product. And what's interesting is you paid a certain amount, like usually it's like $60, and you got this book that more or less described how to apply for a government grant, but that was about it. But then you got this two recurring charges of about $90, and that would happen each month, for different things that were unrelated to the grants. And so the FTC made a major crackdown in that area. The FTC is also turning its focus now to claims of what was called green marketing, that your product is environmentally safe or environmentally friendly. That they're starting to develop standards for what is considered green from that point of view, and that'll definitely be helpful once they do it. So, if you want to get another area the FTC has been focusing on, and that's among their top list is oops, lost the page, is that one area they've been focused on also has been certain types of offers dealing with internet, as well as offers for sweepstakes. And the reason why we mentioned sweepstakes is because they're very highly regulated. Because if you don't do it right, you're actually engaged in gambling. So, for example, if you have a sweepstake, you know, buy a ticket and win, you know, this much money. Well, depending on how you do it, that could also be considered an illegal lottery. And the key from on sweepstakes is there has to be gambling is considered if you have chance and you have consideration and you have a prize. Those three together constitute a gambling or a lottery under almost all state laws. And so the problem with the sweepstakes is if you have to purchase a ticket, and obviously winning a sweepstakes is a matter of chance, and then there is a prize, you run the risk of actually having a lottery. And that's why you see one way to eliminate the issue of being a lottery is you address one of those three requirements. So, and it's usually you address the issue of consideration. So you allow free methods of entry. And that's why you often see no purchase required, and it tells you how you may enter for free. And that's just mainly to comply with state law and make sure that this is a compliant plan. And the states, depending on how large your plan is, you may be required to register with certain states. So, for example, if you're above $5,000 in offer, you must register with New York, Florida, and depending on how you do it, possibly Rhode Island and Arizona. And you, in some states, you have to post a bond. So be mindful that you're in an area that has risk. And one way to do it is if you're going to do it yourself, you make sure you call your counsel and make sure that you go through each of the elements to make sure you're compliant and compliant in the jurisdictions you're going to be offering. Now, you do see a lot of times some offers just aren't, they accept certain states just to minimize their risk. The second thing is that another option, if you do want to offer a sweepstakes or something of that nature, is there are companies out there that offer that, and they basically take the administrative headache. And the benefit of using some of those companies is that you're just part of a larger offering. So, for example, you want to offer a car. Well, you know, they have a sweepstakes that involves several other programs as well. So, the 100 or so of your customers who may enter are added to a larger pot. So it allows you to offer a bigger prize, and it allows you to have someone else deal with the whole administrative risk and compliance issue. So that's high on the FTC's list. In fact, sweepstakes were number 4. Shop at home catalog sales, that was number 5. And that was kind of the business opportunity plan. Internet services were number 3. And then internet scams and auctions were 6 and 7, and then we had foreign money offers and counterfeit check scams. You know, we all make jokes about the Nigerian emails, but it is shocking the number of people who have entered the program and who have actually followed through and ended up losing money. I mean, you see people who thought it was a sure thing and have used trust money, have used their employer's money, and it's actually led to a number of bankruptcies, some suicides, and it turns out, at least at one point on the State Department website, that several people had been killed because they went over there to Nigeria to find out what was going on, and their reception there was not very welcome. So that is, as much as we joke about it, there's still people that fall for that. And granted, now it's not always from Nigeria. They vent other companies, Ivory Coast. They even discovered that, why not try Asia? And so but it's usually the same type of offering. Now, there are, just if this is something of interest to you, There have been several people who try to counter those type of offers. And one guy actually wrote a book about how he tried to comply, and he wrote back and said, okay, I'm going to wire the money to this place. And it was always some place that was inconvenient. So the people involved in the scam would drive 2 or 3 hours and get there. Then they would find that the wire wasn't there. And he would have an excuse. And then he would lead them on for a couple more days. And I think there's a book out on the topic. And but in any event, it's something you need to be aware of. Another top area is telephone and mobile services. And that kind of rounds out the top 10. Now, the FTC also stresses its enforcement priorities. And one thing they, in this annual report, they're stressing are dealing with issues of consumer distress. So we've just come out through a recession. And so the FTC is very sensitive to plans dealing with mortgage relief, plans dealing with get government grants to pay your debts, things of that nature, because they know that you're dealing with consumers who are in distress and they're more likely to take a chance because they're feeling desperate because they're about to be foreclosed on, or they have debt collectors calling them all the time. And so the FTC has really been trying to focus on that, and they've been at a number of enforcement actions. So so definitely, if you want to see the annual report, it's available on their website, FTC.gov. And it really gives you a good outline of what they've done in the last year and where they're going next. And your goal is to just read it and make sure that you're not part of next year's. So hopefully this was helpful. We may have someone back from the FTC on to just discuss some aspects of the report. As you know, we had Chris Olson from the privacy division early on our very first show. But we'll be talking to the FTC in a future show. And when we get back from our break, we're going to have Dan Tynan from East Sarcasm. He's going to be joining us again, and we're going to talk about a few developments going on this week in the internet, and we'll hope you stay tuned.
Stay tuned for more of the Cyber Law and Business Report after this brief recess for our sponsors.
Our clients have earned over $1 billion. Now it's your turn. With over 20,000 products to promote across a huge variety of niches, ClickBank provides countless ways for any affiliate to make money. You can promote any product immediately, no contract required. Looking for recurring commissions? Upsell products? ClickBank's got them. And best of all, you can make up to 75% commissions. Ready to become the next ClickBank success story? Sign up now for free at ClickBank.com.
If you're looking for a new multifaceted SEO and social media toolset, look for the Raven. Raven has the important tools that every internet marketer needs. Raven offers customized metrics for managing link building campaigns, social media campaigns, with campaign reporting and research tools that you can easily manage. Build up campaign performance for your clients and give your team the tools that will make them soar. If you want to increase your internet marketing revenue, look for the Raven. Go to RavenTools.com. That's RavenTools.com.
Your mission: initiate internet marketing measures. Your arsenal: the weapons of mass marketing.
Learn how to accomplish your internet marketing initiative with the do-it-yourself tools and directives from the commanding leaders of cyberspace. Weapons of Mass Marketing, presented by RavenTools.com. Tuesdays at 1 p.m. Eastern, 10 a.m. Pacific, or on demand anytime inside the Internet Marketing Channel, only on WebmasterRadio.fm.
Jim Hedger and Dave Davies bring you the experts and the information so that you can further explore the web marketing world.
Webcology, Thursdays at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific, or on demand anytime inside the Search Engine Optimization Channel, only on WebmasterRadio.fm.
The best gavel-to-gavel legal news and information on the net is right here. This is the Cyber Law and Business Report, only on webmasterradio.fm.
And we're back. We have with us for a second segment, Dan Tynan, who's joining us again. You may recall he's been on before. He's with eSarcasm. And we're going to talk about some of the latest developments going on the internet. Dan, welcome back.
Nice to be back, Bennett.
And one thing I'd like to start off with is
Bennett, Charlie Sheen's online too.
I told you, we have a policy about celebs in rehab. Tell him I'll get back to him.
He insisted. He's winning.
All right, hopefully we are too. Dan, you're a winner.
Not that way, though. I don't have tiger blood.
You just got to feel it in you. Monday was the feast day of St. Isidore of Seville, which I'm sure everyone listening celebrated. And it turns out that, there's, you've heard of the Vatican has saints, and there are actually certain saints for certain things. There's a saint for firemen, and there's a saint for, there's a saint for lost causes. St. Jude, and when people feel desperate, they pray to St. Jude. Well, there's actually, it turns out, a patron saint for the internet. And naturally, you would think that this would be someone, from an area of technological breakthrough, a great thinker, and, someone from a more modern era, possibly the Renaissance, for example. But it turns out that the patron saint of the internet is St. Isidore of Seville, who died, I think, somewhere in the 600 ADs. But he was a very learned man and a doctor in his own right. And so he has been designated the patron saint. Now, there actually is, I looked on the internet, there are certain societies of St. Isidore that try to promote good behavior on the internet. And I contacted one to see if they'd be interested, but I never heard back. But any event, so what do you do for St. Isidore Day? What do you do? I suggested downloading sangria, but how does one celebrate? What is the Cinco de Mayo of the internet?
I guess that'd be the Cuarto de April, right?
Exactly.
Yeah, or whatever the Spanish word for April is. You can tell how educated I am there. All I know about St. Isidore is what I read on Wikipedia. And I'm not sure he is the patron saint of the internet. I think he was nominated to be the patron saint of the internet, but he lost in a vote. And the smoke came up, and it was the wrong color.
Really?
Yeah.
There are several societies out there that claim that the Saint Isidore is the patron saint. So
I tried to find that, and all the references, and there's even apparently in a Boston library a stained glass portrait of Saint Isidore and some technology library commemorating him as the patron saint of the internet. But I'm not sure he's officially Vatican approved.
Ah, so we have a rogue saint.
A rogue saint, exactly. He's a faux saint. But it's appropriate because, why people want to make him the patron saint of the internet is because he was perhaps the first person to try and create an encyclopedia. He tried to collect all the world's knowledge, at least as much as there was in the 7th century AD, and wrote it all down. So in a way, he was the first Wikipedian.
True.
So,
or the prototype for the internet itself.
Prototype for the internet itself, which is why people want to celebrate him. But I think a better patron saint would be someone like Mark Zuckerberg.
Right. Well, I think that the Vatican may have a problem with the he's Jewish part. But
there have been other notable Jews in the Christian faith, and we don't have to name names here. But I think they could be flexible because, he's about halfway to the Roman Catholic Church.
That's true. And,
his population.
I mean, he was Times Man of the Year.
He had a movie. How many people made a movie about St. Isidore that was nominated for an Oscar?
None,
exactly. So I think Zuckerberg is an excellent candidate. And he also kind of epitomizes what the internet is about these days.
Which is?
Embarrassing photos of you and other people. And making comments on embarrassing photos. and basically sharing things that used to be considered unacceptable in polite company. That's the new internet.
So that years from now, you can be embarrassed by the fact that you did it.
Yes, and your children especially can be embarrassed, and you know, and that's very satisfying as a parent of two teenagers. Embarrassing my children is pretty the only pleasure I get these days. So, yes. So I would say the future, I mean, the past, the internet was all about knowledge at your fingertips, blah, blah, blah. But the future, it's really about, you know, photos of you and your skivvies.
So what's interesting, you mentioned that because there's the recent purchase of Huffington Post by AOL. And they explain that as much as, you know, the focus of the newspaper focus on Huffington is its political commentary, that their largest traffic generators are stories about models and, you know,
titty pictures.
Yeah, more or less.
Mm-hmm.
And
yep.
But actually, I mentioned Huffington Post as a transition because they actually posted a list of what they thought were the best April Fool's pranks of 2011. And so if anyone wants to plan their April Fool's next year, you might want to go there. Now, unfortunately, we weren't able to do an April Fool's show since we ran March 31st, and we won't get to until 2017. So, Dan, Dan, you're welcome to come back on April 1st, 2017, and we'll even make you the lead-in guest. But so what else has been going on with eSarcasm?
Well, you know, it's funny because we actually had our own April Fool's thing. We were hacked by Anonymous on April Fool's.
And?
And nothing much happened, actually, which is usually what happens when you get hacked by Anonymous. No, we decided that for April Fool's this year, we would hack ourselves. And we would blame Anonymous for it.
There you go.
So for about 12 hours, our site was inaccessible, and all you could read was a letter from Anonymous discussing why they were hacking us and what bad things we had done. So, and, you know, that was like a private joke between me and JR, my partner on eSarcasm. But aside from that, what, you know, it's really sort of I've been looking at these days, the internet is kind of the way data is clumping together in different places on the internet. And it's clumping together in a big way on Facebook.
Yes.
It's clumping together in a huge way on Google. And it's also clumping together in other ways. I just wrote a blog post this morning about Epsilon data management. Have you been following this?
Yes.
Yeah. The whole email, you know, oops, we got hacked, and these hackers have your email address, but okay, don't worry, it's fine. And the emails aren't coming from Epsilon because no one had heard of Epsilon.
Exactly.
You know, unless they were in that business. They're coming from Marriott. They're coming from JPMorgan Chase. They're coming from Citibank and Target and TiVo and all of Epsilon's customers, all of whom are obligated by law in several states to say, oops, we got breached. Don't worry. Everything's fine. Move on. But we got breached, and, you know, you might have some you know, spammer or scammer contacting you and doing what you just described in the first half of the show.
Yeah, one of those options.
Yeah. Maybe they'll run a Nigerian scam on you. Maybe they'll do the I'm stranded in London, please send me $4,000 scam. Any number of them. But what it does is, you know, it gives people, scammers, an in to do what's called spear phishing. And, you know, to target you specifically. Now, it may not even happen. It might just be email addresses that are sold for, you know, fractions of a penny per address. It may be something as simple as that. But the reason it happened is because data clumps. You know, they don't have to go to Marriott and JPMorgan Chase and Target and TiVo and all those companies to get this information. They go to Epsilon.
Right.
So, you know, they go to Google. They go to Facebook. And so the nature of the internet being that people tend to favor services other people tend to favor.
Uh-huh.
So the network effect, the more popular you are, the more popular you are. So everyone uses Google and everyone goes to Facebook. So that just makes them a big, fat target for things like hackers, but also for things like government entities that would love to get information about you at a particular time because they think maybe you did something bad.
Right.
Or maybe because they just don't like you. Now, I'm not talking about you personally, Ben. I'm sure everyone loves you. But in a general sense.
It's a remote possibility.
It's a remote possibility. I have read your post on Huffington. I think it's a distinct possibility.
So, where was I?
So what I was going to lead to here is there's sort of an irony. I don't know if you've been following the story, but in France.
On Google Maps.
Not on Google Maps, actual France. Google, eBay, Facebook, and a bunch of other companies are suing the French government. And they're suing the French government because the French government wants them to retain their data for a year. Mm-hmm. They want them to retain names, passwords, addresses, cell phone numbers, any data they collect from customers. They want all of these companies to hold on to them for a year. So in case the French gendarmes have a need for it, they can access it. And these guys are fighting it, which I find ironic.
Because, one, they're collecting a lot of that information already, but they're not protecting it.
Right. Well, I mean, I understand the argument against being forced to hold on to all this information for at least a year. You know, companies don't want to do it because it's a hassle and it's a lot of storage. But more importantly, you know, they have this information, and it makes them a big, fat, juicy target for hackers.
But this would make them a bigger target.
This would make them a bigger target.
That would have more data. Now, that's one of the standards the FTC applies is you can be investigated by the FTC for on privacy, even if you comply with your privacy policy to the letter. But if you don't have what is considered adequate security for the nature of the information you have, they can go after you in enforcement on the grounds that, you know, that's not deceptive what you did, but it's unfair. And if you're collecting this amount of information, you have to have, you know, this a commensurate amount of security. And so it's interesting you point that out because, you know, that is one of the areas the FTC has stepped up enforcement on. Isn't our people who are breaching their policies? It's people who aren't providing enough security.
Now, who determines what's enough?
Well, in their view, it depends on the nature of the information. I mean, if you follow this as email addresses, that's one thing. But if it's email addresses with any financial information or email addresses with other personally identifiable information, you know, it could be any one of those. But you know, clearly, once you get into financial information or even more sensitive is medical histories and things of that nature, the need for security ramps up. But
I'm just wondering how they determine what's adequate, because I doubt that, you know, when I write a lot about research and security when I'm not being just snarky. And when I talk to research people, you know, they always say, well, you know, how much security is enough? There's never enough. You could spend all of your money on security and still not be enough. So it's always a question of relative degree versus risk.
Right.
So I'm just curious how the FCC determines that, well, you're not doing enough.
Well, I guess you can look to what other people do is one of it. And, you know, if there are commercially reasonable measures you could take to – you're not going to be able to eliminate the risk. I mean, it will always be a risk, but you can minimize it. And I think that's what they look for. They look to whether – you know, what other companies are doing, and can you take up similar steps to better protect the information you have. And
It's kind of ironic because as we're talking about this, you know, I'm sitting in front of a PC. I'm looking at it, and I was looking at a web page, and all of a sudden now I'm getting a faux antivirus message.
Oh, I hate those. Yeah, and they're impossible to close. Yeah.
Yeah. And now I'm trying to figure out where I got it from so I can never go there again. But I find it ironic that as we're talking about this stuff, it's happening to me.
You know, it was funny. When spam first became a big issue, the FTC held a conference on spam. It was like a three-day conference or something.
I was there. I was actually on one of the panels.
Oh, I was there too.
Damn. And you didn't invite me for lunch?
I didn't, no, unfortunately. it was in my – I turned 40 there. what a way to celebrate your 40th birthday. But
at the FTC, yeah.
It was fun, though, because I used to live there. But anyway, you may recall that I believe it was someone from AOL – he was doing a presentation and showing how their AOL works with their email. And while during the presentation, they get an email, a spam email from someone else. and you know, one of the other providers, I think it was like MSN or something, kind of as a crank. And I don't know if you recall that. It just struck me as the perfect, the timing of it was perfect.
Yes, but, exactly.
So what else have you been working on lately?
Well, I did a piece. I write a blog for IT World about Facebook mostly, but social networking and privacy. It's called Thank You for Not Sharing.
Mm-hmm.
And so on Monday, I posted about, I don't know if you saw the announcement, Obama is running for president. Big surprise there.
Yes.
In 2012, I was shocked, frankly. And so as part of that, dude, they're doing a really big Facebook push. You know, they're all about, you know, the Web 2.0.
Right.
And so there was an app that was introduced called Are You In?
Yes, I saw that.
Yeah. Well, so I looked at it and I clicked on it and I started using it. And the more I used it, the funkier it got. And it started because, you know, I clicked in and I said, oh, this is an app. So I was waiting for the little screen that pops up on Facebook and says, so-and-so wants to access the following information and lists various things. Never got that screen.
Interesting.
Just launched me right into the app. And it's a very simple app. It just invites your friends to join, you know, and it shows randomly, I assume, which friends are not in yet and which friends are in yet. And that's pretty much it. But, you know, the more I looked into it, the weirder it got. I looked at, you know, I said, okay, this app, you know, it was installed, I checked, and then I said it had last accessed my data on October 24th. But the app was brand new.
Hmm.
And then I tried, you know, I have a few other sort of not entirely legitimate Facebook accounts that I use for testing, and I tried it, and I couldn't install it at all. And then I decided to send an email to whoever built this app to say, hey, dudes, this ain't working right. So maybe you should maybe retool it and release it. And when I clicked the link and, you know, contact the developer, I got a page full of lorem ipsum. You know what lorem ipsum
is? Yes, I do.
Lorem ipsum dolor sit amet. That's the fake Latin that's used as dummy text in a template. So the get involved, donate now, Barack Obama email page is full of lorem ipsum and little boxes saying some stuff, some more stuff.
Well, you know, stuff is what wins elections.
It is. It is exactly. It is. So, and, you know, it was really half-assed. And I was shocked and disappointed because, you know, people talk about, you know, Obama being the technology president, right?
I mean, yeah, and also just, you know, in 08, his campaign was so innovative and kind of
you know,
built on what others had done, but at an exponential level.
Yes. So, you know, they were on it, right? They understood it. They knew it, you know, and they come out with a Facebook app and they just go flat. I mean, Faceplant app, really.
Wow.
Yeah. And, you know, I was shocked and appalled at that. And then I saw today that on the 20th of this month, Obama is going to have a Facebook town hall with the new patron saint of the internet, Mark Zuckerberg.
That's right. We need to be appointed him earlier.
Yes. We need to be appointed before that. I'm sure it's a fast process. So, and I thought, you know, how big a role this network is playing in, you know, American politics is also a little concerning to me.
Why is that?
Well, because of what we talked about earlier about data clumping, you know.
It's also endorsing one source of communication over another.
Frankly, I don't have a problem with that because of my personal politics. And also because it's nice to have a few billionaires on our side. You know?
Exactly.
The other side has most of them. So it's nice to have a few on our side, even if they are billionaires on paper.
But he's definitely, I don't think he's converted his billions, but true. I mean, Facebook is private, but, and so that's going to happen when?
So that is going to happen on April 20th, and people are submitting questions via Facebook, and I don't know, I think he's going to do it in person, and, you know, Facebook has been doing streaming video lately, so I assume that they'll be streaming video, but it's going to be Zuckerberg and Obama.
Wow.
Now, Obama can talk. He's pretty good. But Zuckerberg?
I've only heard him on 60 Minutes. I don't.
He actually did a pretty good job in 60 Minutes, but until then, prior to that, he had a reputation of flop sweat.
Wow.
So it ought to be interesting. But you know that the confluence of these things kind of like all hit me at once. It's like, you know, it's hard to know where we're going. You know, you can sort of see little bits and pieces of it. It's hard to, like, climb up the pole and look further down the road.
But, you know, on one level, you know, it's, that's not that innovative or unprecedented. I mean, I remember as a kid when Jimmy Carter had a call-in day.
Right.
And I don't know how many, he had like five calls or something over a half hour. I forget. But, of course, you know, there's probably, you know, 2,000 people who said they called, they talked to him. Kind of like all the people who said they saw Hank Aaron's home run. But, you know, so it's not unprecedented what he's doing. He's just using a different technology.
Although it's funny, though, that I remember that chat. I remember the sweater from that chat. But I remember better Dan Aykroyd's satire of it.
So was that this? I mean, I remember the fireside chat, but I think that was different from the call-in program.
Yeah, it may have been. But I'm thinking of him sitting in the sweater and the fireside chat and the whole
thing. Yes.
And then Dan Aykroyd did a spoof on that where he took people's calls and he told them, like, how to fix the brakes in their car and, you know, some information about science. And, you know, he was kind of like Mr. Expert or Mr. Wizard. So.
Well, he was, I mean, you know, he was the first president to be, who was an engineer.
Right, right. But I'm just saying that they're kind of like having a spoof on him. But I bet more people saw Dan Aykroyd's version of it than they saw the Jimmy Carter version of it.
It's funny, I don't remember the Dan Aykroyd thing, but I do. Everyone kind of remembers Chevy Chase doing Gerald Ford, which ironically enough, there was that one episode where he fell over. He was doing the presidential debate segment,
right.
And he fell over on the podium because he was a very physical actor. But he hurt his himself. Back. And then, you know, as a result of that, he would take pills, you know, to address the pain in his back, and eventually got addicted. And where did he end up? But the Betty Ford Center.
There you go. And so circular.
They actually became friends. And he did a tour with Gerald Ford on politics and comedy. But, so.
Okay. So while we were talking, go to Hulu.
Mm-hmm.
So Saturday Night Live, Ask President Carter.
Okay. We'll take a look at that. And
you will find the clip. He's also on YouTube.
Are you going to submit a question for President Obama?
Oh, that's a good question. That's a good question. When is he going to take John Boehner out and kick his ass? Just bitch slap him.
I think that's one that's probably been asked.
But we haven't gotten a satisfactory answer, and I want to know.
But Well, Dan, it's been a pleasure having you. I hope you'll consider joining us again and bring whatever saints you may have in your pocket. But everyone, Dan Tynan, he's on eSarcasm. You definitely have to check him out. He's a good voice on the internet and always fun to talk with. Dan, thanks again.
Ben, it was a pleasure.
Now, next week, we're going to be talking about an important development affecting affiliate marketing. And what may be the right haven of patents issues. And there's someone who claims to have a patent that affects affiliate marketing and has been going after companies. So we will have, I believe, Joe Volsky, a prominent patent lawyer, to talk about what this means and what affiliates can do to protect themselves. But so I hope you enjoyed this show. And so next week we will have Joe Volsky talk about the patent issue. And anything else you may want us to address, just let us know via chat, and we'll try to address them. But this has been Bennett Kelly with the Internet Law Center in Santa Monica. And it's been a pleasure, and I hope you join us next week.